Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Jason Ophir with the beautiful Sherry Pang for another episode of Paranormal Horizons. Sherry.
Hey, Jason, how are you? How are you doing with this heat? Oh, my goodness. We're in the hot, if people that don't know, we're up in the Pacific Northwest. We're up in the 90s, and we've been in the 90s, and we're going to be shooting for 100 for a few days and then go back up to the upper 90s.
Yeah, I'm fine with the heat because I'm in an air-conditioned basement, so I don't experience it if I don't go outside, which, of course, I don't because I can't stand the heat.
Yeah, it's a pain in the butt, isn't it? Hot and humid. Hey, it's global warming, right?
Yep. Not much going on in my neck of the woods. I have had a toothache for a while and finally broke down and went to the dentist. And unfortunately, I have to get a root canal on Tuesday and a crown, which I don't mind.
Oh, my gosh. Well, are you going to take the day off?
No, probably not. I mean, I've had root canals before and crowns, and, you know, it's not the procedure that bothers me. I got no problem getting my teeth drilled on. It's the bill at the end of it that makes me nervous.
Oh, really? You don't have, I should say you don't have insurance. Oh, you have copay. That's probably what it is.
Well, I have insurance, but I'm poor. So regardless of what the amount is, it's still going to hurt.
Yeah, no matter what. Yep, get it over with. You know, you don't want any infection that's going to go into your bloodstream. That's not something you want to, you know, going to mess with.
Well, they were looking at it, and I guess it was just starting to get infected, so I got to take these dang antibiotics, and then they gave me some Percocets and all that good stuff. So, but it's been behaving well today. I haven't taken anything other than the antibiotic today. So that's what's going on in my world. What about yours?
Oh, nothing much. I mean, I've just been, you know, pretty much kind of laying back for a little bit. You know, I was in the Chinese Gardens, and I did a Chinese medicine lecture and did a little bit of Qigong and Tai Chi, and it was really nice, and it was quite interesting. Do you know what jackfruit is? I posted it on my Facebook, a personal Facebook page. But I went to one of my favorite Asian food markets here in the Northwest, and they had jackfruit, and it's one of the Asian fruits that's really sweet. It kind of has a bad odor to it. But, you know, it's huge. I mean, I'm just a little over 5'1", and the jackfruit is half of me, you know. So about 2.5 feet in length. And the thing weighs a ton. And with the jackfruit, it's like there's like thorns. And they're kind of like the sticky, you know, really thorny, sticky stuff. It was interesting. But they were humongous. I mean, I couldn't even pick one up because it was so thorny. But, oh, my gosh, it was huge. It comes from a tree out in, I know, a couple places. I think India and in Southeast Asia or something like that. But I've never seen a fruit that big. It was just absolutely humongous. But anyway, so we're going to go and start with our guest tonight. I want to go and reintroduce our returning guest. His name is Brian Ouellette, very well known in the field of exorcisms. He's had a couple appearances on Ghost Adventures with Zach Bagan, and he's their exorcist, and he's done very well. He's kind of like a mentor for me. I really look up to him. He's a wealth of information. He's I've learned a lot just by our personal conversations, and I just want to welcome him back. He has a lot to share, a lot to help people so that, you know, those listeners that are interested about whether it's exorcism or being a Catholic or, you know, evolving your soul or, you know, paranormal investigation, he's very well versed. So we're going to bring him on.
All right. We'll bring him on right now. Hello, Brian.
Well, thank you for having me back. I
Always enjoy being on your show.
Hey, hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. Thank you so much.
Well, we have so much to talk about, and we're going to start out, as we were talking earlier this week, we're going to, you know, we were going to start with paranormal investigation, and we're just kind of go with the flow and go where we need to go, so.
Okay, sounds good to me.
Bring it. Now, for the listeners that may have not caught the last time you were on, maybe we'll start off just giving a little bit of a bio. Sherry touched on it briefly, but for those who haven't listened to the previous show.
Yeah, sure. I am a Catholic bishop in the Nicolaitan Catholic Church. I actually am the presiding bishop of the Nicolaitan tradition, and we have an intercommunion agreement with the old Roman Catholic Church through our affiliation with the Order of Exorcists under the chief exorcist, Archbishop Ron Feil. And so our organization was founded by Archbishop Feil back in the late 1970s because there was such a great need for the types of services that we do, which is predominantly exorcism ministry or paranormal investigation to resolve paranormal disturbances. And a great deal of our work involves the investigation of these claims to determine what the origin of the problem is. Because in most cases, I would say, in at least 50 to 60% of cases, it's turned out to be a mental illness or a psychological issue. But in those, in that 50 to 40%, we tend to see genuine paranormal activity. And at those, when a person reaches a point where they are so badly disturbed by what is happening in their environment or experiences that they're having within themselves on either an internal or spiritual level, that's where we come in. After determining, what the nature of the disturbance is, and then we work towards a resolution so that we can bring healing back into that person's life, or if it's an entire family, then we, work with everybody in the environment who needs the help. So that's essentially what we do. And one of the greatest things about this ministry is that we've been able to eliminate a lot of the red tape that comes with the Roman Catholic Church and the way in which one would need to go about jumping through the hoops to get an exorcism performed by the Roman Catholic Church. I mean, they've made it too complicated, and I'm not saying this to diss Roman Catholics. I'm not saying this to be critical of the Roman Catholic Church. I mean, I grew up Roman Catholic, and only in my later years did I come to find that the Catholic tradition was much larger than just the Church of Rome. But one of the things that I will say that works to people's disadvantage is that Roman Catholic Church typically does not help people who are not longstanding Roman Catholics, and a lot of the people that we see are not Roman Catholic, are not practicing Christians. They have a very loose understanding of the Christian faith to begin with. And where do those people go when they need help? There's not a lot of options. And then so a lot of them end up falling into alternative religions and various things that are not as helpful as what we provide, not as I would say what we're able to offer is a more efficacious and expeditious resolution than what they're going to get from just about anyone else that claims to be a paranormal investigator or claims to have some type of spiritual insight that they might be able to use to help them. We have a very good process. We have very clear protocols to work with, and that's made us extremely successful. We have very talented people that work within our organization, within the entire affiliation all throughout the world. So the only thing I would wish is that we had more people, that we had more people that were interested in being involved, particularly within the independent sacramental movement, people that could go to their bishops who are already priests, that could go to their bishops and say, I would like to be at service to the Order of Exorcists. That's really what we need more than anything, because that is somebody that we can install right away in a new location to get them to get the people in their location access to this wonderful resource. Exorcism ministry is a healing ministry. People see it as some kind of mystical, Hollywood and movies, and a lot of people's experience with what exorcism is, or even within the realm of demonic possession on its own, they're only understanding this from Hollywood's perspective. And so, of course, as Hollywood is prone to do, they embellish, they exaggerate the truth, and they have an obligation to their viewers for making an entertaining story. And so some of what you see on television is true, but a lot of it is an exaggeration. And so, unfortunately, people have that's their first avenue of, well, that's their first resource, I should say, of information that they use to formulate an understanding of the kind of work that we do. But it's a lot more complicated than that. It's a lot more involved than what you see on TV. And a lot of people don't understand this, and they don't even understand where to go. You know, this is why I do shows like this, because I want people to know there is help. Unfortunately, we're not everywhere. And there's a lot of people that come to me and say, Bishop, can you help me? I'm in this state or I'm in that state. And I will say, you know, we just don't have the resources to get out to you. We don't have a division active in your location right now, but we will take your information down. And we are working on projects that may, at some point in the future, allow us to go out there and help you. One of the things I'm working on right now is a new project that should, if it's successful, bring some much-needed resources into the Holy Nicolaitan Catholic Church so that we can expand our services within the Order of Exorcists and reach the states and various locations in the United States that don't have a division already set up. So that's essentially what I do. You know, I go around and I investigate claims of paranormal activity, and then I bring healing to people's life who need it.
So typically when somebody contacts you...
So in your investigations, have you had any kind of close calls where... were you scared or have you had any run-ins with the devil or the hellhound or anything like that?
I'm not prone to fear. Fear is not an emotion, fortunately, and it actually works to my advantage in this type of field. I don't experience fear. I don't recall a time in my life where I really ever did. And so that gives me a great deal of advantage in this work, because most of what we encounter are scare tactics. You know, yes, I have encountered the devil. I have encountered numerous forms of demonic entities, some of which are not even really truly satanic. There are variations. They all fall under the umbrella of demonic activity, because essentially, anything that is spiritual in nature that causes harm to an individual on either a spiritual or a psychological, emotional, or even a physical level, we would classify as a demon. But what a lot of people don't understand is that not all things that are demonic in the sense of being a negative spiritual force that is influencing your life in an adverse way is satanic. Some of it is, and that's a very different type of resolution, a very different type of a way of dealing with it. But a lot of it is just a negative spiritual energy that is sentient. So it is a type of spirit, But we would call those, you know, elementals, or they would fall into that alternative category. And that is by far the larger thing that we encounter. But in some of my cases, yes, I have encountered directly a satanic entities. And, you know, one of the things that they use more than anything against us is fear and anxiety. It's one of the tactics of the devil that every one of us has experienced on some level. If you've experienced irrational anxiety, which most of us have, I can guarantee you its origin could be traced back to a demonic interference of some kind. And so, you know, I've learned through my, you know, spiritual training, through my great faith in God, through my dedication to the church, through my commitment to the scriptures, I don't experience that fear. The devil is something to be conquered for me. And so this is a part of the great motivation for my work, because I have noticed that a lot of people, even if they're not Christian, even if they're not churchgoers, even if they're not the kind of people that you would expect to see in church on Sunday, a lot of people are terrified of the demonic. A lot of people are terrified of the devil, whether they are religious or not, whether they even truly believe or not. There is this innate, instinctual fear of this aspect of human experience. And that's unfortunate, because fear is the one it's the one weakness that allows these forces to come into your life and wreak havoc. If we can eliminate that fear, if we can strengthen a person's fortitude through faith and prayer and commitment to the sacraments, and trusting in God, by developing a direct and meaningful relationship with Him, the demonic aspects very much weaken to the point that they become irrelevant. And that's the last thing the devil wants, to be felt irrelevant. But that's essentially how this works. And so, you know, this is one of the sides of exorcism that a lot of people don't talk about and a lot of people don't see, because everyone wants to hear about the rites and everyone wants to hear about the blessings and the magic behind it, you know, the casting out of devils and of course all of the dramatic symptoms that come out of that, whether it be the possessed victim speaking in different languages that they never studied, or levitating off their bed, or even, you know, hearing voices in the room of the possessed, demonic voices, things that we capture on videotape or on audio recordings. You know, all of this is what people are focused on. This is what is interesting to them, and understandably so. It's fascinating because it's not part of our normal range of human experience, and a lot of people have never experienced those things, so they're not even sure it really happens. I can tell them that it does happen, but the fact of the matter is that's irrelevancy. That's the devil acting out in his typical temper tantrum that he has when he doesn't like something. When we come in with great faith, when we come in with the power of the cross to express to these demonic forces that they have already lost, there is nothing that they can do to harm us. As long as we understand this and we go into our situation with that understanding, there's nothing that they can do to us. There's nothing that they can do to us that we don't already let them do to us. And fear is that first doorway. So outside of the dramatics of the rites of exorcism, outside of the dramatics of all of the processes involved in paranormal investigation, my fundamental goal and my fundamental course of action as a bishop and as a minister in this work is to strengthen people's faith and to teach them how not to be afraid when faced with something dark and evil. And, you know, so that's the bigger part of exorcism. That's what we spend most of our time doing, is getting people acclimated back to a relationship to God. And then the devil just loses his power as soon as people understand this. But that's the trickiest part, because we're living in a very secular world now. And we're living in a world where people don't really see things in a religious way. And so, you know, a lot of what they see as religion has been equated to superstition or even fantasy or mythology. And they don't understand that there is a real component to it. But because they're so divorced from it, they're distracted by their computers, their cell phones, their smartphones, movies, television, you know, their jobs, the stress of just living in the modern world, the news, oh my God, the media. I mean, you know, they are 24/7 trying to infiltrate our minds with their agendas, regardless of what it is. I don't care if you're, you know, more of the liberal-sided CNN kind of viewer, or if you're more of the conservative Fox News viewer, they're all trying to manipulate you. And we're distracted. We're very, very distracted. And so we've lost our connection to God, the natural connection that the ancients knew, the natural connection that led them to write things like the scriptures, or even led them to pursue mystical studies and develop the vast Western mystery tradition, and even the Eastern mystery tradition in the East, and same thing. I mean, it's pervasive all throughout the world. And we've lost that connection. And so part of my job as an exorcist is less about casting out devils and a lot more about helping people to reconnect to that ancient principle that we call God. And you'd be surprised that how much of a healing effect that has on a person's life who is going through a paranormal disturbance, or even just any type of spiritual demonic illness.
So for somebody like me that has troubles with anxiety and has for a long time, does that necessarily equate to some sort of demonic influence, or can it be just, you know, some sort of mental illness or some natural predisposition for anxiety?
It's a little bit of both, to be honest with you. It's a little bit of both. You know, there are people, there's no question about it. I mean, my you know, outside of my religious work, I do have there's a secular component to my career. I have a very secular degree in psychology, and you know, I very, you know, worked in clinical psychology in clinical settings. I used to develop primary prevention programs for at-risk populations, and there's no question in my mind that scientifically speaking, some people are more predisposed towards anxiety and depression than others. But the spiritual aspect of it is more of a metaphysical thing, in the sense that what we don't fully comprehend as a modern society, and we've made great, don't get me wrong, we've made great leaps and bounds as a society, particularly in the modern age, with great development of technology and much greater understanding of the world of science around us. And that's a wonderful thing. That's not to be shunned. That's not to be criticized. That's a good thing. That's part of what our species should be doing. We should be evolving, not just physically, not just biologically, but we should be evolving mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. But see, the problem is this. We have been conditioned from the time that we were born, practically, to believe that the external world is the real world, and that the world inside our minds, our thoughts, our feelings, everything that is non-corporeal is somehow not real. So when you have anxiety and depression, we tend to say, oh, that's all in your head. You need to go see a shrink over that, because you know, this is not real. And the reality of it, I should say, not the reality, the actuality of it, is that the world inside your head is just as real, if not more real, than the external world around you that you've been conditioned to believe is the real world. And so anxiety and depression, or any mental illness, really, you know, which is an internal experience for the most part until the behavior of the victim, or I should say the patient in this case, starts to exhibit, you know, disturbances for other people around them. It's internal. I mean, even, you know, I would even argue that psychopathology is really designed, or I should say the psychotropic medication or psychotropic pharmacology is really designed to make people who suffer from mental disturbances less disturbing to the rest of us. It's not really about healing them, because I've never known a psychiatrist that could heal anyone. They're not in the business of healing. They're the only doctor that has the qualifications of an MD that is not in the business of healing their patients. They are in the business of creating maintenance and tolerance for society. Psychiatrists work for the rest of us. They do not work for their patients. And that's a very unfortunate actuality of this situation. Now, that being said, there are those with predispositions, but those predispositions, we have to ask, where are they coming from? Where is the true origin of even a biological malady? And if you really break down the processes involved, they always start as non-corporeal origins. Even if you want to look at things in a positive light, look at I don't know where you guys are at exactly, but if you go to whatever the biggest city is closest to you, I would imagine it's Portland. Are you guys in Oregon or Washington?
Oregon.
Yeah, we're
Oregon.
Yeah.
Okay, so Portland would be your biggest city, I would imagine, the closest one to you guys. Okay, so
yeah, I'm
when you go to
Portland.
Oh, okay. Well, then there you go. So when you're in Portland and you're looking at the skyscrapers around you, you know, you see these great physical structures that you can touch and you can walk through, and they're concrete in the sense that they have a very structured floor plan. Everybody that observes these buildings sees them the same way. And so we would classify these things as real manifestations of the physical world. But they did not just spawn one day. They didn't just show up where we just went outside and all of a sudden a new building was there and we don't know how it got there. We designed them. And that design process can be traced back through not only the construction crew that built it or the contractors that set up the construction project, but the architects that designed it. And that all started in the person's mind. It all started in a non-corporeal world inside the internal reality of that architect. And he had to take those inspirations out of his mind and put them in a concrete form through symbolic representations of graphics and his blueprint design, and then share them with someone who can interpret and read them accurately, which required a contractor, an engineer, and a construction crew. And then they made it happen. So the physical world does not spawn the non-physical world. It's the other way around. We start out as non-physical, and we work towards manifestation in the physical as an expression of creation, not the other way around. But we're taught it's the other way around. And so I would say that anxiety and depression are real experiences. They're not all in your head. They're real experiences that are occurring on a metaphysical level that is both spiritual and psychological. And then we can even say that the ancients understood this, because the very word psyche, which comes to us from the Greek language, means mind. I mean, we see it as only mind, but we don't understand that the other side of the word psyche in Greek also means soul or spirit. And so to the ancients, mind and spirit were no different. They were one and the same thing. It's only in the modern world, after essentially the Enlightenment period in Europe, did we start to say that there is a difference between a person's mind, which is their psychological cognitive processes that are spawning out of their brain, and spirit, which is like some other thing that we don't fully understand, and not everyone even believes because science can't observe it. The ancients would have laughed at us for separating them because they always said they were the same thing. And so we need to understand, and it's very important, that part of the work that I do is to help people to sort of unlearn some of this modern conditioning, to let them understand that mind and spirit are one. They are identical. They are the same thing. If you're wondering where your spirit is the very thoughts that you have contained within your head. The problem, though, is that there is a difficulty for science to be able to observe that there is some eternal quality to that spirit. And that's where we start to lose our connection, because we see death, and we see death as permanent, and we see death as the end, and it's done. That's it. Lights out, you're gone, goodbye. But it, you know, what is it that lives on? Because certainly our bodies die and decompose and rot, and our brain is part of our body, and that goes too when we die. That will decompose the same way. So if our brain is what's producing our thoughts and cognitive processes, the experience of consciousness that we understand to be equated to sentience, then what is it that can possibly live on? Because everything gets left behind when we die. And that's where science is struggling. But so to answer your question, I'm going a kind of a long route, but it's a kind of important for your audience to understand where I'm going with this in order to, you know, fully answer your question. But the reality is that because mind and spirit are one and the same thing, the maladies of the mind are also spiritual illnesses, and they have spiritual origins. And so if you have a propensity, even a genetic propensity towards depression or anxiety, where there are chemical imbalances that can be measured in a scientific way, those imbalances are being spawned through spiritual operations that we have chosen to ignore because we have become too high and mighty within the realm of science to appreciate them. But they are no less spiritual, and they affect us the same way. And if we tend to be a person who is prone to things like depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, or even a psychotic disorder like schizophrenia, we are going to be vulnerable to demonic attack, because that's a wonderful weakness, and the devil loves to be able to hide under the disguise of mental illness, because he can go on indefinitely tormenting that person while they go and get clinical help with some psychologist or psychiatrist somewhere, where they just get pumped up full of medication and nothing's ever done to fix the problem. And I can tell you, I used to be in that camp, because I did clinical work and I got frustrated and fed up with it. And the reason I moved into ministry was because I knew there was a better way. I knew that we could heal these people. And so through the processes of understanding how to orchestrate the spiritual realm, how to navigate it in a way that can manipulate the very ways in which they are being manipulated, we can actually reverse mental illness and cure it. That's essentially what we do. So if you're asking me, you know, is it mental illness or is it demonic possession? Well, there is a difference. I'm not going to say there isn't, because there's always going to be there's always going to be a chasm that exists between a person just being disturbed on some emotional or psychological level and then the full integration of a demonic foreign sentience invading that person's mind. That is different. But what I want to make clear to your audience and to yourselves is that the origin of the anxiety, the depression, the suicidal ideation, the schizophrenia, all of the mental faculties that we would classify as a mental disorder that needs to be treated medically actually has its origin on a non-corporeal spiritual level. And if you fix the deficit at that level, you can heal that person's illness forever. And that's why it's important to understand this. That's why it's important to understand that exorcism is 90% healing and only 10% fighting demons.
So typically when people contact you, generally speaking, what sort of claims of activity are they having? I mean, what prompts people to contact you? I assume it's not like in the movies where people are crawling on the walls or the walls are bleeding. I mean, what are some of the most common things or common reasons people contact you seeking help?
No, that's a good question. And honestly, you know, yes, you're right. Crawling on the walls, bleeding walls are not common. They do happen. And we have gotten calls about that. I've seen walls bleed. And so, you know, I have experienced in some very extreme cases, some of these very extreme examples of demonic activity. So it does happen, but it's not common. So the common things are going to be things that are going to be more familiar to a lot of people. But what we tend to see more often than not as the primary complaint that brings people to find me is that they are feeling an overwhelming, suffocating evil presence in their homes or in their lives in some way that is causing a unreasonable amount of either bad luck or misfortune that tends to affect everybody that person comes in contact with. That would be one of the number one things. The number two thing is where a person feels that they are being physically assaulted or attacked on a regular basis, usually in a sexual way. So there are people who will be sleeping at night perfectly fine, and they will wake up to find some dark presence standing over them, raping them in some way. Mm. And that is one of the things, that's one of the things that we see very often in the initial intakes that we get when a person wants us to open a case to investigate, where they were fine one day, and the next day they saw a presence that, you know, and then it attacked them. And it scared the hell out of them, and they are desperate. Believe me, people don't contact me until they're desperate. Very rarely do I ever get people who are just sort of casual and saying, you know, I think my house might be haunted. I just want to have you guys come in and check it out, maybe give a blessing, and hopefully, you know, it's nothing. I don't really get those. What we tend to get are people who are at their wit's end, and they're at the point now where they would almost rather die then continue to face the torment and terror of the experiences that are happening, which are usually physical, personal attacks on their being. So that's
what
we're
seeing. I have a question, Brian. That's very good. When you do a case, and then when you leave and everything's calmed down, you got rid of whatever the demon and you took care of the people, and if they don't go back or they don't, you know, they're straight and narrow, they don't mess with the talking to them and bring all these things back, is there a possibility that these things or the activity can come back again? Is there a chance? Yes or no? Or what's
there is. There is. That's Sherry, that's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful question. It's something that I actually forget to bring up when I do interviews, and I'm glad you brought it up because it is important. It's very important. It might be even fundamentally important to getting, you know, people help, because one of the things that they tend to see me as is some kind of wizard. You know, they think I'm Gandalf or Dumbledore coming into their house to cast some spell, you know, it's going to just like fix everything. It does not work like that. I am a facilitator of God's grace. That's what a bishop is. That's what any priest is. That's what any exorcist is who is validly ordained, you know, by a valid bishop that has apostolic succession. We are facilitators of God's grace. And so what we do is we are able to create through a connection between God and the person who's experiencing the attack. We can facilitate a connection of grace that helps to begin the healing process. But the problem is people think it's a magical cure because it feels magical. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've laid hands on someone and they're healed from an affliction that they've had their entire life. And that's a very magical, emotional, miraculous experience for them. And it's very easy for them to see me as some kind of demigod or some kind of, you know, magical creature who came in as almost like a savior. And I'm not. I am merely a facilitator. What I can do is I can activate the dormant grace of baptism that exists within that person. And I can create a whirlwind of grace within them through the grace that's been given to me as when I received holy orders to be able to begin the healing process. But if they don't accept that grace, if they don't continue to cultivate that grace, if they don't take steps to change their lives that led to the initial problem in the first place, then yes, they become vulnerable again. The grace eventually starts to taper off. It goes dormant, and then they become a sitting duck all over again. And certainly a demonic entity that gets cast out but not destroyed, which sometimes does happen, will wait very patiently for that person to feel that everything's safe again and to go back when the person least expects it and attacks them again. And so this is why I don't just go in to people's homes and say a blessing, perform an exorcism, and say, goodbye, see you later, glad you're feeling better. I always encourage them, we need to work now towards developing your relationship to God. We need to strengthen your faith. In some cases, the person's not even baptized. And see, I can't even help someone who's not baptized. I have to get them baptized first. There's very little I can do for someone who's not baptized. I can do a few things. There are a few things that I can do. But overall, if a person wants to receive an absolute resolution, they must be baptized because that's the initial grace that exercises them when they need it, if they ever need it. And so a lot of times when a person comes to me, I would say at least more than 50% are not baptized. And then what we do is we set up a date to get them baptized. And in the Catholic tradition,
they go through the baptism, but they don't believe in God or they're not Christian. What do you feel about that?
We don't do that. If a person, in order to get them baptized, we first make sure that they understand what it is that they are receiving, because there is a particular, not so much for a baby, but for an adult, it is necessary that adult has made some type of commitment to Christ. In order for the grace of baptism to actually effectuate within their life. It won't happen if they just take the sacrament, but they don't believe in it. Nothing will come of it. And so in those cases, what we do is we work with them on their level. I am not some kind of person who's going to proselytize to convert people and say, you need to be Christian and, you know, hellfire and brimstone. I don't do that. I believe that our relationship to God is a personal thing as well as a public thing. And there's a certain community aspect to it once you enter into the auspices of the church. But prior to that, I mean, and then actually outside of that, it's all personal. And so I respect that. And so there are people that I work with who are Muslims. I actually had a case where we were dealing with a Muslim family. Sometimes I've even worked with Buddhists. I work with people who are just non-spiritual or non-religious. And so there's a wide gamut, but every facet needs help. I mean, I can tell you that the Christians are no more afflicted than the Buddhists are afflicted, any more than even the agnostics are afflicted. It does not matter what you believe. If you come under demonic attack, demonic attack knows no denomination. And so anybody of any belief system can fall under it. And so what we need to do is help them on their level. So if they are looking to me, because I am a Catholic bishop, and, you know, it's very obvious when you look me up online that this is who you're going to get, a lot of times people are already open to the idea of coming into the Christian faith. And that's just something that works to my advantage, because then I can say, well, they're already ready to now start exploring this, and we can start exploring this with them and help them and get them to the point where they're ready for baptism, and then we work on that. You know, but there are, every now and then we'll run into somebody who just wants a resolution but is not willing to commit in any sense to the Christian faith. And so I don't abandon them. I will work with them on their level. If they're Buddhists, I do know certain rites. I used to be a Buddhist, so that kind of helps me a little bit. But I know certain rites of exorcism within the Buddhist system, and that can sometimes be very efficacious. But again, it comes down to them cultivating whatever they understand to be God or spirituality. And so even a Buddhist who's not necessarily dependent upon a deity, Buddhists are not necessarily atheists, but God is not necessarily important to a Buddhist practitioner, which is really the highest state for a Buddhist is enlightenment, and that can be achieved without a deity. So when you're working with somebody like that, what you need to do is help them to cultivate that experience of enlightenment. And so we will work with them in that respect. Instead of trying to convert them and baptize them, we will try to work with them in strengthening their faculties of consciousness so that they can better engage their meditations and achieve some state of spiritual realization. And that can protect them in many ways. Maybe not as well as baptism, but it can protect them. It is a type of divine grace. And so I don't discriminate either on the basis of a person's belief system. I will work with them on any level I need to.
I know people who were brought up Catholic, and I don't know them, you know, they're not my friends, but they're acquaintances, but they were brought up Catholic and supposedly are Christian, been baptized, but they dabble into the pendulums and the tarot cards and all the different, you know, woo-woo stuff that is esoteric.
Uh-huh. Yes, and I mean, see, the interesting thing about this is that the esoteric side of things is vastly misunderstood, and because, again, we come back to the human default of fear, which is an evolutionary carryover, by the way. I people sometimes get surprised when I talk about evolution. I am an evolutionist. Because I don't see a difference between evolution and creation. For me, even though I believe in creation as a Christian, I see evolution as the process through which God created things. And so I see evolution as part of the miracle of creation. I don't see a conflict there. So when we're talking about evolution, I see this also on a spiritual level. And so a lot of times what ends up happening is we were not always as sophisticated as we are today, or creatures that exist at the top of the food chain. We used to be prey to several types of predators that fortunately no longer exist, or we have been able to control the natural world to a point where they pose us no harm. But there was a time where we were not as fortunate, and so we have a lot of anxiety and depression that we experience today is a carryover that is stuck within our genes from this earlier time when we needed a fight or flight response. Anxiety is nothing more than an overactive fight or flight response. That's all it really is. Now, there is a spiritual dynamic there, which I talked about earlier in this show. And that would, you know, I mean, that opens a can of worms that we don't have time for to really go into how that relates. But that's where essentially, at least on the physical level, that's where it comes from. That's why we still have problems like anxiety today. Because today we shouldn't have anxiety. We should, our intellect should be able to completely transcend it. But the fact is, we haven't evolved enough to root out that primitive fight or flight response from the days when we were preyed on by larger predators. And that leads us to a fear reaction. And so anything that is foreign, unusual, might be dangerous, we tend to get afraid of and we avoid. And because divination or the esoteric arts or anything that falls into the bracket of the occult, the very word occult means secret, it's something that is out of the normal range of experience, which means it could be dangerous. And so our primitive monkey brain starts to work over time and says, oh, tarot cards are dangerous. Astrology is dangerous. Pendulums are dangerous. And then so a lot of people just avoid them altogether. But then you have those people who are fascinated. They're adventurous people. They're not going to be dictated to by ancient tradition. And so they don't want to be told by some higher religious authority that this is wrong or this is evil or this is sinful. And so they explore it. And some of them have even made religions around it. I mean, Wicca, in a sense, is essentially a reinvention of some kind of loose form of paganism that has incorporated New Age philosophies, theosophy, and very liberally expresses itself through the occult sciences and arts. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that, really. The danger is not understanding how to navigate it, because the problem with the occult is that it is extremely powerful, and we are not properly trained because we don't – who are you going to go to? If you want to be properly trained in the occult, who are you going to find? What are you going to do, join the Masons? Good luck with that. Even if you are successful in getting in, you're not going to get anywhere near enough of what you need to navigate the occult safely. Same thing goes with the Order of the Golden Dawn or any of these mystery schools, esoteric societies, even theosophy. It's a shadow of what it used to be under Blavatsky. I mean, it's a completely different thing. And the reality of it is, without that training, it's dangerous. But I liken tarot cards and astrology and pendulums and even ceremonial magic, witchcraft. I liken all of that to driving a car or flying an airplane, okay? You're not going to take your two-year-old toddler daughter and put her in the driver's seat of your car or put her in the cockpit of a 737 and expect that that little toddler is going to be able to safely get you to where you're trying to go. You're going to crash. You're going to die, all right? Because it's the toddler does not have the knowledge or the skill or even the capacity to be able to understand how to control those very powerful devices. Now, because death is going to result from your indiscretion of putting your toddler in that position, does that make the car evil? Does that make the airplane evil because it's going to kill you? Of course not. It just means it's dangerous because only a skilled user should have access to the cockpit or to the steering wheel. Only a skilled user who has been properly trained, who has proven himself to the point that somebody has signed off on his talent and says, okay, you are now ready to receive your license, should be using these instruments. And so the problem is, we don't do that in our society because we see esotericism in the modern age as fun. Oh, let's go and buy tarot cards at Barnes & Noble. Oh, let's go buy this book, this Llewellyn book, or this New Age bookstore, and let's go and buy a book on the tarot, and we'll tell fortunes tonight. Or let's go to Toys R Us and buy a Ouija board. Let's do that. It sounds great. Sounds like fun. And the problem is, they wouldn't be dangerous if they came with the same type of training and instruction that's required of a person to get their driver's license or their pilot's license. But they don't. It would be the equivalent of us saying, you know what, here's a car, here's the keys. We don't care what age you are. We don't care if you've ever seen a car before. Go drive it. And we just deal with it. And that's what we do with the occult. And so the occult's not evil. The occult is dangerous only because people don't know how to navigate it safely, because it's an extremely powerful tool that requires an extremely significant amount of skill to be able to use effectively. And that's all it is. So this is how some people end up having problems, Sherry, because what they end up doing is they go and they buy a Ouija board, they play around with it, they don't have the training, they don't know what they're doing, and then it opens a Pandora's box within their mind, which lets the demonic in. But it's not the Ouija board that does it, it's their ignorance that does it. That's the real demon. It's ignorance.
So I'm looking at the clock here, and we only have a few minutes left, so I want to give you an opportunity to let listeners know how they can contact you if they think they have an issue or want more information about what you do.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. They can contact me by going to esotericcatholic.org. That's esotericcatholic.org. Or you can go to nicolaian.org. It's the same site. That's nicholean.org. There's a link on the in the menu on that page to request an investigation. That's the intake form. That would be the first step. So anybody trying to reach us for help would have to go there first anyway. So that's generally the best place to start. If though you have questions and you're not, you know, you're feeling a little apprehensive, which a lot of people are, because there's a little bit of a stigma or taboo surrounding this kind of work, we can rest your minds. But if you want to talk to one of us, you can reach one of our lead investigators at the outreach office, and you can call them at 770-744-0323. That's 770-744-0323. That's the outreach office. Someone, if you leave a message, someone will call you back and you can discuss your situation. You'll still have to fill out the intake form if you want us to come down and consider your case. But that's one way that you can get more information if you need it. And understand that I operate the Atlanta division. So we basically will investigate cases around a two-hour radius around Atlanta. But recently, we are now working on developing a budget that would allow us to go national. So we have started taking cases on a national level if you've got a really bad case, and as long as we have the budget, we may be able to take your case. There's no promises. I never know. But if we're successful with getting this budget together, we might be able to take your case. So we could take cases outside of the state once this happens. So we're already starting to take intakes from various locations outside of our division. That's an option for you. Again, no promises, but it would allow us to start the process towards talking with you and getting a better understanding of what kind of help you need. And then maybe we'd be able to help you even just by working with you remotely. Sometimes if it's a very minor case, we can give you pointers as to what to do, or we can send you some blessed materials that may be able to help you.
Awesome. Well, hey, Brian, I want to thank you again for coming on the show. We're running out of time, but thanks again, and hopefully we can get you back on in the future. And I think the message that you're sending is important for people to hear, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that would benefit from your knowledge and experience. So thanks again for coming on Paranormal Horizons tonight.
Anytime, just let me know and I will make myself available for you.
Thank you, Brian. You're always a pleasure to have on our show.
Take care. Thanks again. You both
care.
Have a great night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Have a good night.
Yay.
All right, Sherry, what do we got next week?
Well, we're going to have a new guest. Next week will be J.J. Crane. He's going to talk about the New Jersey Devil. So, cryptozoology. He's did some research on Bigfoot, but we're going to concentrate on the New Jersey Devil. It looks like a pretty evil, mean. I can't describe how it just looks really gross. It's a, I don't know. It's a hard way to describe it. It looks like a cross between a Tasmanian daredevil to part wolf to part demon, or I don't know, but apparently they do exist. And he's going to talk about the different accounts and what his knowledge of the New Jersey devil, daredevil. So, yes, it's going to be interesting, and, you know, I'm open to it. And it's going to be cool to listen to his take and what he knows about it and educate our listeners. So I'm excited.
Yeah, that'll be fun. It's probably an escaped government experiment or something.
Escaped government experiment. Oh, my gosh.
Never know. Our government's pretty dang shady. Well, with that, unless you have anything else, we'll close the show. And we'll see everybody next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time, back here on Blog Talk Radio. And with that, I guess we're done, unless you have anything else, Sherry.
No. Just anything, check me on Instagram. I am now on Instagram at Psychic Medium Sherry, so check me out, and you'll see a different side of me, the personal side and also professional side. So, yes, Psychic Medium Sherry on Instagram and on Facebook. So thank you guys for all your support over the years, and have any questions or any comments or what you want to listen to in the future, give us a quick shout or a quick post on Paranormal Horizons on Facebook. And the radio show, Jason, thanks the radio show.
Yes, we got to thank our friends at KITC-FM and KNCP-FM in Central Oregon for rebroadcasting this show. And, it's been a great partnership. And with that, Sherry, we'll wish everybody a fantastic, safe week, and we'll see you all next Sunday, 8 p.m.
Hey,
good night, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Stay cool, stay safe, and peace.